Are you craving incredible song recitals? Are you interested in a behind-the-scenes view into professional songmaking at the highest levels of artistry? Are you looking to develop your own artistic and entrepreneurial skills as a classical musician in this ever-changing 21st century landscape? If you found yourself saying yes to any of those questions, look no further than Cincinnati Song Initiative's week-long program, The Fellowship of the Song. Taking place this year from May 19 through 26, the Fellowship brings together some of the country's brightest song performers and teachers for a week of classes, concerts, and study events. And we invite you to join us as an auditor, either in person in Cincinnati or online wherever you may be located. When you join the Fellowship as an auditor, you gain instant access to the entire week's events and can go back and relive the magic through HD video recordings of each and every session. To learn more about this incredible new opportunity, visit CincinnatiSongInitiative.org/audit.
Give me a second because yeah. I just realized I better close this window before I like annoy all of my neighbors by like shouting about art song out the window at 8:18 in the morning. Kids, and welcome to Follow the Leader with me, your host, Mandy Madrid-Sikic. If you are a fan of the podcast, remember to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen. And remember, if you like what we are doing on the podcast, tell your friends. And if you don't, then tell your enemies, because as I like to say, any publicity is good publicity. On today's episode of Follow the Leader, do I have a treat for you? I decided I wanted to do something a little bit different. I decided I wanted to be surprised. So I invited my friend Dylan Perez, who is a London-based pianist. I invited him to come on the podcast and share with us two songs from his recent album with tenor Ted Black. I told him, Dylan, come on the podcast, share some recordings, but don't tell me what you're going to share because I really want to be surprised. So I am so excited that he took me up on this offer and indulged my desire to be surprised. Before we turn to our conversation, a little bit about Dylan. Dylan is a highly sought after recitalist, chamber musician, and coach specializing in vocal repertoire. Dylan studied at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, which is where I met him. He's won so many prizes. He won the Gerald Moore Prize for accompanists. He's also won the Oxford Leader Young Artist Platform, where he was performing with contralto Jess Dandy. He's also been a semi-finalist in the Das Lied International Song Competition and also the Wigmore Hall Independent Opera Song Competition. He was also a finalist in the Kathleen Ferrier Awards. He made his debut at Wigmore Hall with Emma Nikolovska in 2019. This guy's just been playing everywhere and knows all the things, and you're going to hear we have a super fun time together. So let's get into it. It is actually now recording. Oh, and our waveforms are traveling at the same speed.
That's fabulous. Okay, we've got it working now.
Dylan Perez, you're here.
Party.
Oh my God, thank you so much for joining us on Follow the Leader. I have been greatly looking forward to speaking with you. I mean, listen, we're going to have a good time today.
I can't wait. Thank you for asking me to be on.
And, of course.
You know, we've been putting this together for a long time, so I'm glad it's happening.
I know. So am I. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, what you do?
Yes. Well, I was born in Michigan and I studied there and went to University of Michigan and studied with Martin Katz, accompaniment, collaborative piano, whatever you want to call it. I say, just call me whatever you want as long as you pay me. That's all I meant, really. And then I moved to London about 9 years ago. Actually, I just had my 9-year anniversary, which is pretty insane.
Wow, really? Yeah. 9 years?
Yeah, crazy. And I studied at the Guildhall, and now I'm a freelance collaborative pianist and vocal coach in London. I do lots of like at-home coachings, which is lovely. Singers bring things in to sing through with me, and I kind of help them along on the learning process and tell them what sounds good and what sounds like it needs improved.
What a nice way of putting that.
Yeah, exactly.
This might need some improvement.
Yes, yeah. That's my nice way of saying it.
I don't know if I've ever told you this, but when I first got to Guildhall, there was like this mythical figure I had heard about, and his name was Dylan Perez.
Oh my God, that's so
And nice. I remember just like hearing about, oh, Dylan, he like knows all the people and can play all the things and just like does it all. And I just was so in awe and already impressed before I had even met you. And I would like creep around the halls, like wondering who he was. I was like, ooh, is that him? Is that him?
That's so funny. I guess I did do a lot at both University of Michigan and Guildhall. I kind of just like played for everybody, didn't say no often, which was a big learning process as well.
Oh, honey, for us all.
Definitely. I was like absolutely exhausted most of the time and didn't know who I was, but was still enjoying it mostly. So yes, well, that's lovely. I don't know how I got mythical status, but I kind of like it.
I mean, you do have mythical status, and you like surpassed that in every way, shape, and form. And then I remember like the first time we like kind of hung out, and I was like, oh, I'm so special. Dylan Perez wants to hang out with me.
Well, I wanted to hang out with you because I was like, oh my God, finally a normal person. You know?
Oh, normal, really? What a compliment.
Well, listen, compared to lots of other people that I had met.
So today you are here to share with us two songs from a new recording. Is this right? Is this what's
yes,
happening?
Yes, it just came out on September the 8th. And it's a new live recording from a concert that I did with tenor Ted Black, who's fabulous. And we met at Royal College of Music a few years ago, and we decided to apply to the program that is run by the Abbey called Royaumont in France. And basically you go there four times a year for a week at a time, and it's masterclass settings. So you have a pianist and a vocal person, master teacher. And throughout the week you work on different repertoire with them. So this was, and then we also did recitals at the Musée d'Orsay as part of that, in front of different paintings that we would choose and like kind of illuminate the paintings through music, which was very fun. And at the end of that, we had a live recital that was also recorded. We did a few patchings after that, but mainly it's a live take of what we did and what we learned.
Was that scary? Live take situation?
Yeah, it was scary. But, you know, also because we were like really immersed in the music for such a long period of time, it just felt like kind of an extension of what we had just been doing all the time. It was a bit scary. And actually, Ted has been really busy because he's in demand at the Wiener Staatsoper.
Oh, my.
So he couldn't actually come to the last week of masterclasses. So I invited another friend of mine to come along. And Ted just came in for literally 2 days in, and then the next day, rehearse, recital, record, and then leave.
Whoa.
It was basically that. So that part was intense.
Yes.
So I'm pretty happy with the result.
Amazing.
But yes, we've got two songs. The first one is quite hefty in length, so I hope that's okay.
It's totally okay. Oh, and by the way, I actually just have to fill in my listener. So this is the first time I'm doing anything of this sort. I actually have absolutely no idea what songs we are talking about today, other than I know one is German and one is French, which is an incredible exception I have made for you, my dear, because on Follow the Leader, we usually only talk about... actually, we've done some English, I think, too, at some point, haven't we? I think we've done some English.
Well, the French has a bit of German influence. I'll say that.
Oh, wonder. Okay, so it ties right in.
Yes.
Okay, I'm so excited to hear what we're going to be listening to today and what you're going to talk about. So should we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it, baby.
Okay, so da-da-da-da, what's the first song you are going to be sharing with us?
Okay, so I'm very excited to introduce that the first song, the first surprise song, is, yes, in French, en français, and it's called De Rêve, from Prose Lyrique by Claude Debussy. De Rêve means of dreams, and we'll cut there for a minute because I need to turn off the...
Okay, do it.
Sorry, I forgot I had laundry on.
How dare you do laundry while we podcast? It's okay, don't worry about it. I've been up and down like already so many times.
It's fine. Okay, so De Rêve, which means of dreams, and it's got an ellipsis after that. Dot, dot, dot. De Rêve, dot, dot, dot. Is a really cool song. It's the first song of his Prose Lyrique, and Debussy wrote these in 1892, kind of before and during the process of Pelléas et Mélisande, his opera. I think I'm not good with dates, so don't at me or whatever. But,
it's okay, but I can fact check all this.
Yeah, it's all around that time. So, and also a really interesting tidbit is that these four songs were all musically written by Debussy, and also the poetry was written by Debussy.
Oh, which, interesting.
Yes. And, you know, he's really trying to, I think he was really obsessed with symbolism and all this kind of imagery at the time, like a lot of poetry was. And so he's really trying to make his own symbols in words that are being reflected in music.
Oh, I see. So, do you maybe want to read us a translation?
I'll read you a translation. Yeah, I'll read you a translation, and it is bonkers weird, but we're just going to go along with it and let yourself just like lull back and, you know, forget about life for a minute, I guess. Okay.
I love this. Okay, I'm actually going to like sit back, close my eyes, and allow you to read to me in your sultry tones.
Okay. So this is Of Dreams by Claude Debussy, with a translation by the one and only Richard Stokes. The night has a woman's softness, and the old trees beneath the golden moon dream of her who has just gone by, her head bespangled, now broken-hearted, forever broken-hearted. They were not able to beckon her. All have gone by, the frail, the foolish, scattering their laughter on the thin grass, casting to the glancing breezes the bewitching caress of their burgeoning hips. Alas, of all this, nothing is left but a pale tremor. The old trees beneath the golden moon tearfully shed their lovely golden leaves. No one will plight them again the pride of golden helmets, now tarnished, forever tarnished. The knights have died in their quest for the grail. The night has a woman's softness. Hands seem to brush the souls. Hands so foolish, so frail, in the days when swords sang for them. Strange sighs rose from beneath the trees. My soul, you are gripped by some former dream.
Oh my. This is incredible. It's incredible because, I mean, first of all, French poetry is so much different than German poetry, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually don't know if we've covered, well, I guess I have covered something a bit later. I'm just kind of thinking about the time frames. Most of the poetry that we cover was written, you know, at the beginning of the 19th century, if not maybe a little bit before. So this is just a different world altogether.
Totally.
So tell me, what speaks to you about this poem?
Okay, so the poem to me, first of all, I think it's really interesting that it was written by Debussy himself. Mm-hmm. and that obviously he's really trying to replicate the poetry of the time with symbolism. Lots of Baudelaire influences in there. And I think he was really trying to expand his compositional technique so that he could really fuse together music and words. And to be honest, I'm not quite sure which one came first. I don't know if the words came first or if the music came first, but it really feels like they're one and the same. So almost as if he's writing it at the same time or adjusting the words to fit the music or vice versa, depending on if he liked what he was writing in the moment or something.
It'd be so interesting to speak with a composer, you know, composer slash poet about that specific process, especially with something like this where they do seem so one and the same.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I haven't heard the music yet. I actually don't know if I've ever heard this. I mean,
well, yeah, I think the four are kind of more obscure Debussy as well. They're all quite long, and the music is kind of weird, and it doesn't always make sense. There's like a real sense of gravitas to them, which is what I was saying before about the kind of German influence with this. He was also really highly influenced by Wagner. And I think this, you can hear that in the Baudelaire songs that he wrote. He wrote five poems of Baudelaire as well. And in these prose lyriques, you can really hear the kind of fullness of texture that he got from Wagner and this kind of like wide, expansive musical experience, but also you can feel that it still has like the transparency of French music, which I think that's why I really like the dichotomy of the two. It's really interesting.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah, just kind of flipping through this music, it does look very interesting. Like, ooh, I want to know what that sounds like and what this is going to sound like. So maybe we could go ahead and take a listen now. I feel like there was one other thing. I just wanted to say, I love the translation of the word bespangled. Like,
yeah, of course.
What? Do you know which French word in particular that was translated thusly?
The word for bespangled, I think, is emperlé. Perlé, which is like the French word for pearled.
Pearled. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
so,
okay.
Emperlé means like beaded or like...
Like empearled.
Yeah, exactly. Which like, I guess would make sense in English, but you'd be like, wait, hold
like,
on.
Like what does that... There's so many times like, you know, when you work with translations, both from French and German, where I'm like, I think we can just kind of use that in English. Like, I get it.
Yeah, I like know what the image is, which is really amazing actually, because that's all part of symbolism in poetry, in French poetry. It's all about like not really having any real like visceral emotions to it, but seeing the symbols and the images just as they pass by. And then overall, it creates this kind of feeling.
Yes. Yes. Oh, I'm so excited. So let's go ahead and listen.
It's long, sorry.
Recording number 3. Here we go. Oh my God. This has been the most technologically fraught episode of Follow the Leader in history, but it's okay. We're soldiering on. Things are wonderful. Things are great. It's a wonderful Monday.
I mean, I didn't even know how to attach my headphones to my iPad earlier. So, you know, it's fine.
It's You're okay. I think crisis averted. I think we got all the stuff. You're here. And Dylan, that recording was gorgeous.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So tell me all the things. Like, what was it like learning that music, rehearsing that music, and then the actual performance?
Yeah. So I actually learned these a few years ago, maybe like, actually at Michigan, when I was at Michigan. So maybe like 15 years ago.
Right.
Okay. But a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And like, was like, should not have played them then. But I did learn them. And I did.
I think we all played things in our youth that we probably shouldn't have.
Yeah, exactly. So actually coming back to them and like really delving into that, we recorded this first one and the third one, but we did work on all four.
Got it.
With the teachers. And Ted had actually learned them all before as well. So we kind of came at it like with a knowledge of the songs anyway. So the rehearsal process was pretty easy because we just kind of like fit the puzzle pieces together.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I feel like it's always a good choice when you are like getting ready for a performance or to record, right? Like when you're visiting old friends, they just kind of settle in a deeper, like more grounded place in your body.
Definitely. Definitely. That's exactly how we felt. And like learning it, these are definitely technically challenging for Debussy. They're really at one moment very light and very kind of effervescent, and then at another moment very like heavy and chordal and almost chorale like. And so they are very difficult, but once you get them under your fingers and you follow the shape, it really kind of fits together. I find that with Debussy all the time. Like, it's a pain to learn, but it's really worth it in the end.
Yes. You know, the process of going through, learning it, figuring out where things go, but then when it settles, like when everything kind of like notches into place.
Yeah.
Feels absolutely incredible. Like wearing silk almost.
Yeah, definitely. It just feels like right, and it couldn't be any other way. I just really enjoy the harmonies that Debussy has come up with and the kind of like moments of mystery that, like at the beginning, he uses this kind of like whole tone-ish vibe going on where we don't really know like what key we're in. And then all of a sudden we get these kind of major to minor and then weird chords before we go on to this like real kind of luxurious melodic moment that is firmly in a key center for, for a few bars at least. But I like the kind of the transitions that he has between these like harmonic safety places in the music and then kind of these nebulous moments as well.
And I also really understood what you meant when I got to the end of the piece. I really had this sense of all these images and things that had washed over me by the end, and I was compelled to take a deep breath to really let that all integrate, you know, into my consciousness, into my soul.
Well, I always take a deep breath after as well, but that's mainly to make sure that I'm still alive at the end of it.
Oh my God, too real, too real. I know what you mean. I can't remember if you had told us a little bit about Ted, but could you tell us a little bit about Ted? You said you met him at RCM?
Yes, so at the Royal College of Music in London, he was a student and I was on the piano, collaborative piano fellowship there. And we met there and we just really hit it off. We've got the same kind of like interests in the same kind of music and it just feels very natural, very easy. And plus he's a fantastic singer with a really interesting range as a tenor. He's got a really lovely like baritonal quality in the middle, but also has an extension up top. And his languages are great. He's a hard worker. He, you know, he just checks all the boxes.
Love
he's a fun person. So
whole package.
Yeah. And actually, these songs had never been recorded by a tenor before. So that's another interesting thing. They do work for tenor. You have to, like, a specific kind of tenor. One that has a real nice kind of baritonal bottom.
Right. We do love a good tenor with a good bottom.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my, on that note, should we move on?
Awesome.
Okay. Yes. I thank you, first of all, for sharing that with us. We never get to hear French music on Follow the Leader. So that was a real treat for us to have an experience completely different than what we're used to. But now we're going to turn to our tried and true German songs. So
yes.
What have you brought for us to listen to today?
Well, funny you should ask. I have brought another one of our recordings that we just recorded. And I should say that this recording is also in conjunction with the three other duos that were on the master course. So we all recorded like 20 minutes of music and put out on an album called Voyage à Paris. And it's on B Records, some French label. And it is on Spotify, Apple Music.
Oh, so we can listen. I'll put the link in the show notes. I'll put the link to it in the show notes so my listeners can hear the whole voyage.
Yes. So the next song is the fourth song from Korngold's Lieder des Abschieds.
Oh my, I love Korngold. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But I've never heard these. Yeah. So
this one is called Gefasster Abschied, which means resigned farewell.
Oh, are we going to be sad?
Well, kind of like bittersweet.
Okay. Should we read a translation?
Yes, I'll read a translation again by the fabulous Richard Stokes. So, resigned farewell. And the poet is Ernst Lothar.
Lothar.
And I don't know anything about him, so don't ask.
I actually don't know anything about him either.
He was someone fabulous, probably.
Okay, so a little bit about Ernst Lothar, because I had actually never heard of him before. His pen name is Ernst Lothar Müller, and he was an Austrian writer, playwright, screenwriter. So he was born in 1890. He's mostly known for his literary works and his work specifically with the world of theater and film. So he began his career as a journalist, and he later turned to fiction writing, and he explored a lot of themes relating to his Jewish heritage and Austrian identity. One of his most famous works is the novel The Angel with the Trumpet, which was written in 1945. One of his notable plays is called The Burning Bush, which was written in 1930, and that was dealing with the rise of anti-Semitism in Austria, and that was later actually adapted into a film. So because he was of Jewish descent, due to the rise of the Nazi regime in Germany and Austria, he was forced to flee his home country. So he eventually settled in the United States during World War II, and he continued his writing and screenwriting career there and died in New York City in 1974. Okay, back to the conversation.
Okay, resigned farewell. Do not weep that I am now going. Be cheerful and let me kiss you. If joy does not bloom when we are near, it will greet you more chastely from afar. Take these flowers that I have picked, red China roses and carnations. Shake off the sorrow that oppressed you. The heart's blossom cannot wither. Do not smile a bitter smile. Do not push me aside in silence. A soft breeze will soon fan you once more. Love will soon escort you. Give me your hand without trembling. Give me all your rapture to this last kiss. Be not afraid of tempests. After storms, the sun rises more resplendently. So, take one last look at the lovely lime tree, beneath which no eye ever saw us. Believe, oh, believe, I shall find you again. For they who sowed love with a smile shall reap its harvest.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that sweet? It's like, it's a bit camp. We love a bit of camp.
I do love a good reference to a lime tree rendezvous.
I know, right? It's everywhere in German.
It is. It's kind of like a little wink there at the end, beneath which no eye ever saw us.
Exactly. Like, ooh, we had our little secret time together.
Mm-hmm,
and we don't need to say it out loud what it was, but we both know what it was.
But we both know.
Yeah.
Oh, I love this. I love this. So Korngold, what can you tell? Can you tell us anything about Korngold before we take a listen to his setting of this wonderful text?
Yes. So he wrote these. These are his Opus 14, four songs of, like, farewell songs in 1920. And again, I'm not good with dates or anything, but Korngold left Europe and moved to America at some point in his life and became like a real Hollywood composer. And wrote some scores for films and other things like that. And so his music really has this like filmic quality, and it does, but it also kind of references modernism in Europe at the same time, because there's lots of like crunchy harmonies that, you know, you can hear a bit of Schoenberg or a bit of Berg or some other composers that were writing at the time. And what I really like about Korngold's music is that it, well, especially this song, he really marries the text and the inflection of the text of the German with the musical line itself. So you can really hear the voice as if it was speaking, but it's always on pitch and always sung beautifully. And underneath, the piano is just kind of like a, not, it's not background at all, but it's just helping along. There's moments where it shines through, but then it's just really kind of helping. I imagine some soldier singing this to his loved one and just kind of like sitting down and just like kind of improvising the piano part almost. It feels like that.
Ooh, I like that. Okay, so a little bit about Korngold, because I have not yet covered him on the podcast. He was the son of a music critic, and it was clear early on that he was a child prodigy. He had an active career in theater throughout Europe while he was in his 20s. He did a lot of conducting and composing, and soon garnered the attention of the filmmaker Max Reinhardt. Reinhardt wanted Korngold to make an arrangement of Mendelssohn's A Midsummer Night's Dream for the film version that Reinhardt was making. Korngold eventually came to write a number of film scores and was well established as a leading composer of film music. The biographer Brendan G. Carroll described Korngold's style thusly: treating each film as an opera without singing, so each character has his or her own leitmotif, Korngold created intensely romantic, richly melodic, and contrapuntally intricate scores, the best of which are a cinematic paradigm for the tone poems of Richard Strauss and Franz Liszt. He intended that, when divorced from the moving image, these scores could stand alone in the concert hall. His style exerted a profound influence on modern film music. Korngold eventually became a naturalized citizen of the United States, and he died in Los Angeles in November 1957. Okay, back to the conversation. And it, you're right. I always thought it had kind of like an old Hollywood type of sweep to it.
Yeah.
And harmonic vocabulary is so lush and nostalgic, and you just get carried away. And I did not realize that he actually became a Hollywood composer.
Yeah, yeah. He left Germany, or Europe, and I can't remember why necessarily. It was probably because of a war. It was always because of a war then.
Probably.
Womp womp. But yeah, he made a name for himself, kind of like Rachmaninoff did. I mean, it's the same time period as Rachmaninoff and all these other guys that were writing kind of this neo-romantic style, which was,
gosh, I sure do love that neo-romantic thing.
It's really
some of my favorite stuff.
I think for a while, like when modernism really took over in like the 60s and 70s and like experimental music became the forefront of music in general, it became very kitsch to like Rachmaninoff or Korngold or other composers like that. But now they're really having a renaissance because I think people just want to be refreshed and taken away by it. And they're always popular with audiences.
It's, yes, really nice. Question, was this originally written for piano, or was it originally written for orchestra and this is a reduction?
Originally written for piano.
Oh, amazing.
And I think it was orchestrated. I'm pretty sure it was orchestrated. The score that you're looking at, we've had it transposed up from the score that you're looking at.
Okay, cool. Well, ooh, time signature 3444.
Yeah.
Wow, complicated stuff we got going on.
Yes.
Oh, I'm excited. Okay, well, let's take a listen, shall we?
Can't wait.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah. lass dich von mir küssen. Blüht das Glück nicht aus der Nähe, von Ferne wird's dich keusche grüßen. Nimm diese Blume, die ich pflückte, Monatsrosenrot und Nelken. Lass die Trauer, die dich drückte, Herzensblut kann nicht wanken. Lächle nicht mit Bitten lächeln, stoße mich nicht stumm zur Seite. Linde Luft wird bald dich wieder fächeln.
Just love it.
It's a cool song, right?
It's really cool. And you know, there was one thing that really stood out to me. You have all of this crazy chromaticism, right? And it's all kind of moving around. You're basically getting assaulted by accidentals.
Yeah.
And then this one line where he says, Die Sonne. It's like mi re do. Like, it's like the simplest melody. Like, we didn't just sing all over the place, you know, every which way and the other. And we just finished with a nice mi re do.
Yeah, it's for the amount of accidentals in this. If I got paid per amount of accidental in this, I mean, I'd be a rich, rich man.
You know, we really should start charging that way.
For sure.
Especially if
something has to be transposed, because I did learn this in the original key transpose it, and
God.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, with a composer like Korngold, that is really a disaster, because it really does, the way you originally input it, it kind of wants to stay that way, both like visually and orally, I feel like.
Yeah, definitely. And then, like, if I play something in a new key and suddenly I hear different spots differently, like different chord progressions differently, and I think, oh god, is that the right, is that actually right?
Yes, or yes, 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 yes.
Did I learn it wrong? Or
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, really weird.
I also, the ending was so tender in a way. I mean, you know, all of the poetry was tender, but I still didn't expect the ending to be as tender as it was. And slightly playful. Like, I don't know. I loved that mix.
Yeah, I think that's why it's more bittersweet than, you know, the poetry could be read as like, extremely sad and I'm going to leave you forever, maybe, who knows. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think that the poem is more like, oh, don't worry, I'm just going away for a little while, and you know that I love you, and we'll see each other again.
Right.
There's real hope in it. There's not like, it's not like usual German dramatics, which is like, I will leave you now, and I may never see you again.
It's not Krieger's Ahnung, but you mean.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a fabulous song and poem, but you know.
Totally, but a much different vibe.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So what drew you to this piece? Like, did you both choose it together, or was it, did Ted bring it to the table, or did you bring it to the table?
I brought it to the table. I learned them at Guildhall, and I'm with our friend Bianca Andrew.
I do remember Bianca.
And she loves Korngold. So these were some of the first things that we worked on together, and I had never done any Korngold before. And trying to learn these, I remember sitting in the small practice rooms by Guildhall and just wanting to tear my hair out because I couldn't make sense of the music. The music was just so bizarre to me. I had no idea what was going on. But it really has this kind of like Viennese lilt to it. Mm-hmm. Through all of it. And so I brought it to Ted because we were thinking of bringing some German for the weeks that we had German teachers on this master course. And we didn't really want to bring anything too standard. We brought some standard things, but we wanted to really focus on some like non-standard stuff. So This, even though it's slightly standard, we decided on this because he really liked it, and we just needed to get them transposed because they're originally for like high baritone kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I have heard tenors do them before. I don't know if they've done them in different keys or not, but anyway, so I brought them to him and he really liked them, and we just learned them from there.
I wonder if there's a favorite part that you have within this particular song.
So I really like you said, the moments where that's so entangled chromatically.
Yes.
But then it just kind of like opens up and like blooms into like this like completely normal chord.
Yes.
For example, like, gib deine Hand mir ohne Zittern, which has after like a bunch of like chromatic, weird sounding, is he playing the right note or not, chords in the left hand. And then it just kind of fizzles out into this like gorgeous E flat major or E major harmony.
Yes.
And I love the ending because it does have the chords underneath the Weine nicht, like don't cry. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It really has this like gravitas to it.
Yes.
But like you said, it also has this da-dee-dum, ba-dee-dum, playful kind of quality to it. Like it's not so serious.
Right, right.
It always has kind of a bit of a smile after it. And that bum-bee-da-dum, that theme throughout the whole song is kind of like Ländler, kind of like skipping through the Alps, like ba-dee-da-da,
ya-da-da-da. Yes, absolutely.
Almost yodeling or something.
Yes.
So those are the two spots that I really like.
It's funny because the second someone puts Korngold in front of me, I'm like, oh my god, this is gonna be a thing. But then it's so satisfying. It's similar to the Debussy that you brought to us in that way, I feel like, where it takes a good deal of time to make sense of it all and kind of put all the puzzle pieces together. And even the fact that this is in 3-4 and 4-4, right? Once it kind of notches into place, it feels absolutely incredible. I think the Debussy maybe feels a little bit more like wearing silk, where this kind of the way it notches in, it feels like you've really learned the steps to a complicated dance and are truly embodying it.
That's a great way of putting it. Yeah, that's how it feels when you're learning it, for sure.
Yeah.
It does kind of mean that you need to go measure by measure, bar by bar for a bit, but
After a while,
all kind of fits together. And that's the magic moment. When you sit down, you finally play it through and you're like, oh.
Yes. Okay. I love that. That happens all the time when you're learning something. You're like, oh my God, I hate this. Even though I love this. I hate it. And then suddenly you sit down one day and, oh my God, there it is.
Yeah. your brain has made the connections.
Neurons have actually connected.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I always say that, you know, watching you, I was just telling Sam this, Samuel Martin, the director of the CSI. I was just telling him yesterday, you know, because we're sitting down to record this today, and I said, piano playing never makes more sense than when I watch Dylan play.
And oh, that's so sweet.
And I have thought that since the first time I watched you play, and it was evidence to me of your right to maintain that mythical status. But also, I feel like in things like these songs you've brought us today, that ability to really make sense of the music, it's really evident in these recordings and how you would never know from listening. You would never know just what an absolute chaotic, yeah, chromatic forest it looks like on the page. You would not know that.
Carnage.
Absolute carnage. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, from listening to you play. And my only regret is that I couldn't actually physically watch your hands play this, because I know it would make even more sense.
That's sweet. Thank you. Well, you know how much work it takes, and it does take a lot of work. And I had a lot of help through the process. So,
Dylan, I've had so much fun with you today, listening to these recordings and just seeing your face. It's been such a treat, because actually I just saw you in person for the first time in years. Just saw you in person. What was it, like 2 weeks ago? Not even a week ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, you've been all over the world since then. But yes, it was only like a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
It's been so nice. Thank you for having me on. I'm really happy to share these two songs with you.
Yes.
And plug my CD.
Yes, your CD. Can you tell us once again where our listeners can find this album?
Yes. So this album is called Voyage à Paris. Or Voyage à Paris for our French listeners. And you can find it on Spotify. It should be up on Apple Music by now. Deezer, Tidal, Amazon Music. It's all
the places we find music.
Yes, exactly. And if you're also interested, a few years ago, recorded the complete songs of Samuel Barber. And that is also available to find on all your streaming platforms.
Oh, amazing.
And includes 19 world premieres. So
get
your ears around that.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, we'll definitely have to check that out. And you also do like coachings, both virtually and in person. You are based in London. So if people would like to meet with you in person, maybe they could reach out to you via social media. Can you tell us where to find you on the socials?
Yeah, I'm best found on Instagram. I don't really know Twitter, and I've never opened TikTok, so and I'm only 33. It makes me sound like I'm 65, but you know,
you kind of do have a little bit of an old lady vibe, but I really dig it. It works for you.
I like old ladies. Why not? That sounded weird, but okay. So on Instagram, which is my preferred social, you can find me at Perezalicious. PerezAlicious. Perez Delicious.
Oh, God. Thank you for not making me spell that out for everyone.
I had to really think about that for a minute.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here. And yeah, we're going to have you back, because this was too much fun. And you have so many other good recordings. And there's just so much nerdy stuff for us to chat about. So
I love it. Anytime that you want me back, I will be here.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, kids, I think you can tell we kind of like nerding out about song. That was just so much fun. I love Dylan, and it's hard to get us to stop gabbing about this stuff, but somehow we were able to wrap it up in under an hour. I can't thank Dylan enough for joining us on today's episode, and also a big thank you to you. Yes, you, listener, for spending your time with me here today on Follow the Leader. Remember that Follow the Leader can be found in all the usual podcasty places. And please, if you like what you hear, leave a review. It is truly the best way you can support the podcast. Follow the Leader is a production of Cincinnati Song Initiative. You can learn more about their network of podcasts at cincinnatisonginitiative.org/podcasts. You can also follow me on Instagram at LeaderNerd. That's at LIEDERNERD. See you later, nerds!
Should I put animals away, or is it okay if they make noise?
Oh, those? I think your animals are adorable, and I don't mind if they make noise from every now and then.
Okay.
Oh my god, my animal is busy being a shark. Wait, let me grab him for a second so you can see him.
Lyle. Mm. Oh. Look who it is.
Look, Thor, it's Glenn. I've never had two dogs on the podcast at the same time across a sea and a continent. Oh, Thor's actually watching.
I think Thor's seen Glenn. I don't think Glenn has seen Thor. Look. Oh, there he goes.
Oh, he's crying.
Oh, gosh.
What do you think about that? Oh my god, Thor knew that that was a dog.
Yeah, Glenn looks at dogs on the screens all the time.
Does he?
Yeah.
Glenn, oh my no. god, that is so funny. Okay, so maybe we opened a can of worms introducing yeah. our dogs. All right, well, that was the first dog meet on this okay. Follow the Leader.
Fabulous.
If you love this podcast, then you'll love the Song Cycle podcast, also by Cincinnati Song Initiative. Song Cycle introduces the coolest and awesomest leaders of the song world today and dives into getting to know them and their unique stories, where they think song in the 21st century is headed, and lots of other great topics. If you're looking for your next source of inspiration as you continue on your own musical journey as a song lover, look no further than Song Cycle with me, your host, Sam Martin. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and join the conversation.